Welcome to All Things Medical here on Talk Radio 1170 KFAQ with Dr. Jerry Block, published author and board-certified internist with a doctorate in alternative medicine. Now, Doc Block believes that your best health can be achieved through a combination of nutritional, traditional, preventive, and alternative care.
And thank you very much. Welcome to another session of All Things Medical right here on Talk Radio 1170 KFAQ here on your Sunday with Dr. Jerry Block from the Integrations Health Center at 61st and Sheridan, online at docdocblock.com. Also, don't forget you can like the Integrations Health Center on Facebook and check in with Dr. Block that way. And we have, as always, a beautiful guest in the studio with us, Doc.
Not as always, but we do. She's
well, that's
always
true.
A beautiful
when
guest.
She's here, it is always beautiful.
So Dr.
Sometimes
Lindsay
we have
Bergson.
Some ugly guests. Dr. Bergson, welcome once again.
She flew in early this morning.
Oh, early this morning? How?
No. Last night I came in.
Oh, yeah, last night?
But by the time your plane landed, I was after
all the storms last night.
It was very late, and so we still went out and hit the town dancing. Went out with my good buds.
Not I. She went out with her
girlfriend. We didn't get until 3 in the morning.
Oh, and you went dancing after that?
Yes.
Man. Dr. Bergson, you amaze me.
Well, when your hormones are balanced and you're digesting your nutrients and you've got passion in your pocket, you just...
Passion in your pocket.
Now
passion
gonna,
in your heart.
Now
passion
you're gonna be,
in your head.
Yeah.
And the head gives you passion to learn, passion to help. Your heart gives you also passion to help the world. And passion in your pocket, you can make a little bit of money that you can afford your passions for everything else. And some of us don't worry about money, and money is just a secondary phenomenon. We certainly need it to exist, but we don't need it to collect. Sure, we want to save for our old age, but hopefully people like you and I will never have that old age, and we can keep on going till the very end. I don't know what the end is like. You take a deep breath and say goodbye, or somebody takes us out suddenly, or we close our eyes and end up in heaven above.
You know, it's interesting that you bring all of that up, because in my own life, in the last 6 or 7 months, 7 people that I knew and was close with died that were all younger than me.
That's a shame.
It really made a change in your thinking, because I heard after that you took a month vacation.
Well, I decided that the most important thing is vitamin C connection.
That vitamin C, along with the other vitamin C, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 milligrams, but the vitamin C with connection is what life is all about. Because if you don't have that connection, you're unconnected with yourself as well as with everyone else, as well as with nature.
What's connected vitamin C then?
I went and spent a week with each one of my dear close friends. I used to live in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Ooh.
So I went back to where I used to live, and I lived a week with each dear close set of friends, and I gathered together. I didn't go to just do touristy things or go out to eat and drink. I would have people come over for cards, for Scrabble, to talk, to hang out, to really, really find out what was going on with
their
life.
That's the vitamin
and
C, Jimmy.
Ah.
Yeah. Connection. C
yeah,
for
that's
connection.
Wonderful.
It was really great. And, you know, in Europe, they take 6 weeks off.
In Germany, it's mandatory for employers to give 6 weeks off. Here, they may do it after 60 years of working, or maybe 16 years
true.
Of working. They get 1 week for every decade or so on.
Right.
It takes a long time to accumulate that, but not so in Europe.
We are so addicted to speed and to money and to status. We have just gone so far afoot. And if you know that the other vitamin BE, the vitamin B to be. I mean, what good is even your relationship with God unless it makes you more present and congruent in yourself and with those people around you and whatever you're doing, present? You can feel when somebody has presence, when they're present. It's a totally different feeling than when they're so scattered and so stressed and so overstimulated.
It emanates from them.
Right.
You can feel
it.
It's palpable. You walk in a room and somebody's just giving off that energy, those good vibes, so to speak.
I think much of my younger life, with so much focus on a lot of, you know, understandably, you're trying to accrue some rupees in the bank and you're trying to get everything, your ducks in a row and so forth. I remember being very stressed. You could hear it in the voice when you're not present in your own voice. You can tell when someone's listening, which is really the best conversationalist. And so I just took a month off to get really present. And then after that, I had an incredible boat trip that some people that had felt they wanted to gift something to me. And it just was this amazing month of connection, of vitamin C. And it brought me to try and take a look at where am I really connected in my life to myself and where do I get disconnected, and to make that part of my focus of this year to really be in. You can only give to someone else what you have with yourself, and I want connection with others. So this focus is in a loving connection with myself.
And you're trying to do it in a natural way, without medications, without antidepressants. You certainly do your full complement of hormones, because humans, male, female, need hormones. They need the amount of hormones that when they were younger and God gave them in their 20s and 30s, they need them when they're in 40s, 50s, and as we get a little bit older, 77, you need them even more.
You know, it's amazing. One of the most incredible studies that came out in JAMA in July of 2002, it overlapped when the Women's Health Initiative came out, and it trumped the scary headlines, because that's what sells news. We are addicted to speed and to fear. And so we threw the baby out with the bathwater, but that study that really got quieted came out in the journal of the American Medical Association, and it was called the Cache County, Utah study, where they took, it was a prospective study where you start with a group of people who are healthy and you follow them into the future over time to see in the end point, that's what they call what you're looking for, was cognitive change, Alzheimer's. What we're all worried about, will our wits keep up with our chronological age? And what they found over almost 14 years and almost 10,000 people was that if women had been on estrogen replacement therapy for at least 10 years, not just the symptom relief that women have been taught to just take it for it as a short period of time, but to continue the healthy signaling of the brain, then they had a 50% reduction in all kinds of cognitive declines like Alzheimer's, Lewy body, etc. So if anyone were to say, if Dr. Oz were to get on the TV and say, here is something that could reduce by 50% your risk of having Alzheimer's, you'd run out and get whatever that was. Mm-hmm. Well, what is that? It's keeping your brain flush with a natural, individual, balanced level of
There's
hormones.
Always naysayers. There was a recent study that showed this wasn't cognitive, but hippocampal mass, that with women on estrogen, there's a decrease of hippocampal mass, but they did not correlate that with their cognitive function. I've seen time and time again that older people just can't think as well. They see cognitively impaired. You put them on their hormones, and they become bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and their cognition has improved.
Well, that's pretty shocking to me about the hippocampal mass, because the university...
If there's two doctors, there's always three opinions, and there's
always...
Because
they did pre- and post-MRIs with estrogen replacement and measuring the volume. That's where your whole sense of self and memory come from, is this little set of cells that has the highest metabolism of any cells in the body and the highest energy centers, mitochondria. It's the hippocampus. That's what shrinks. That's what we're talking about before you get Alzheimer's. Your hippocampus mass goes down to almost nil, and they were able with pre- and post-MRIs, they could fluff it up like a filler in your face. They could give estrogen to women and testosterone to men and fluff up the mass. So I hadn't seen that study where it said the opposite.
Yeah. There's always, it was a very, it was only 23 patients, I mean, today.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to,
And the hippocampus, really is seahorses?
It comes from the Latin word that stands for seahorse, because it looks a little bit like the shape of a seahorse. But so, it's a very tiny little number of cells, but that has the most blood flow of any other cells in the body.
And the mitochondria are the most active there.
Right.
And this has much of our memory stored.
It's basically the physical analogy of your soul. If there was a clump of cells that you could say, where's my soul? Where is the soul inside
soul
this body?
Our soul would look like a seahorse.
It looks like a seahorse. You've got a seahorse soul.
I like that song, Dr. Berkson. Yeah.
But, you know, right when we're finding out that bioidentical hormones can do so many other things other than just tamp down the symptoms of menopause, just when we're learning you can strategically use them to often put endometriosis to shut it up without a surgery or even if you failed surgery, so many different things, now our access to bioidentical hormones is being threatened.
This
is big time. This is huge now.
The DDC, the demonstrable difficult to compound group, 27 different compounds, including HCG, testosterone, estradiol, estriol, all those things, even progesterone.
They're trying to shut down mom and pop compounding pharmacies.
And the testosterone, for example, has been bioidentically made for almost 100 years.
I know. It's really a movement by the FDA. So they released a list of nominations. The name of the list is called Demonstrably Difficult to Compound. What does
DDC.
That mean? These are so tough to compound. It's not safe for you to buy these from the mom and pop compounding. So you got to go buy them as meds from the other side, the big pharma side. It's a vying over the money. And we're just learning about all the there's a study that came out yesterday about a significant link between birth control pills because of the synthetic hormones in them and stroke in young women. And a lot of gynecologists are giving birth control pills for perimenopause instead of giving bioidentical, and it's really increases the risk of stroke.
And the fact that they're coming orally as it goes to the liver,
right.
They are changed biochemically and make hypercoagulability in that individual.
Right. When you take your hormones orally, it makes your blood sticky.
So
and
some
sticky blood is a higher risk for stroke and heart disease than anything.
Birth control by injection, and what they use is Provera, the metroprogesterone. That's
still vasoconstrictive. And
sure.
The synthetic progestins are really the bugaboo. And even there's an article that came out just recently looking, and they clumped all synthetic progestins under the term progesterone, which is not accurate.
And that is so confusing. Doctors can't get in their mind the difference between progesterone and progestin. Progesterone is a progestin, but most everything else are synthetic.
And the natural bioidentical progesterone activities reduce the risk of stroke, reduce blood stickiness, which is called platelet adhesion, and reduce fibrinogen and the little fibers that stick those platelets together. It does the opposite of all those things, but because those terms are so futzed up, because docs on the whole haven't been prescribing hormones for 10 years, this is an arena that holds so much potential for strategy to heal so many things, but there's so much confusion. So you're more apt if you go to a doctor today, even if you're a gynecologist, and ask them, am I a candidate for hormones? How should I take hormones? You're more apt to get an inaccurate answer than almost any other arena of medicine. So it's very confusing for a patient. What should I do?
But there are some prescription non-compounded progesterones, Prometrium, for example.
But, you know, it's funny. So Prometrium is a micronized progesterone that you can buy from Walgreens. Every single time I take that, I get dizzy. I don't have – and it is in peanut oil, and I don't have an issue with peanuts. And they were thinking that some people maybe have a sensitivity to peanuts or nuts. Maybe those are some people that have reactivity. But I have never seen the same exact response to Prometrium as just getting it compounded at the mom and pop or, you know, Care First and Broken Arrow, et cetera.
There is going to be a bioidentical prescription drug. Is it called Replenish that's coming out?
It's in its for a drug to come out, it has to go through what they call phase 1, 2, and 3 trials. The regulations are all set by the NIH, and they have to prove efficacy and safety. And it is in its third phase. It was published after the second phase in peer review literature. But basically, it's estradiol and a micronized progesterone. And what they're trying to do is make one size fits all, not give you some of the other protective things, but they want you to go by that as your hormone rather than
have it customized.
And it will
only come in two sizes, I understand.
Yeah, it'll be very minimalistic, you know.
And this is given orally?
It'll be an oral, yes. And
which
so
is you're, what we just talked about.
Makes your blood sticky to take hormones orally. Now, not progesterone. Progesterone's a different animal.
Oh,
you want to take progesterone orally.
Progesterone, you can take it
so
orally.
We're not saying this for all hormones.
Pregnenolone, and that is protective for the brain, eropregnenolone.
Right, so you want to take progesterone orally because then when you do, oops, because you took it orally, you make a breakdown product that, of all things, acts like a natural Ambien, and we know it acts in a way to protect your brain and nervous system along with vitamin D to literally protect you against Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, a lot of the neurodegenerative illnesses.
So when we give this, I usually give it an hour of sleep. It works within a matter of 30, 40 minutes.
It's incredible. And you know, the sleep, what I don't understand, okay, if they're talking about all these regulations, we're all so addicted to regulations in this society. Everyone's so fearful. You know, if you look at sleep hypnotics, if you just look at those class of meds, the massive epidemiologic research.
Gosh. Those people that took them, the incidence of death in the next
premature
decade.
Death, cancer, hypertension, so many issues in multiple thousands of people, even if you've only taken 16 or 17 in a year. That's it. And so I don't understand why we wouldn't look at bioidentical.
This is a statistic. You might also say, if you want to be a devil's advocate, which I occasionally am, that many of these people that take it have issues to begin with, and then they have some sleep issues because of their disease, and maybe that's why it happens. That's just being a devil's advocate.
I'll tell you, most people, if you balance their hormones and you look, hormones lean on nutrition, which lean on digestion, and you look at somebody as a whole, look at their whole life, and you futz and tweak and retweak. On the whole, almost everybody starts sleeping really well on their own. It's very rare that it doesn't happen. And a great night's sleep is fabulous, but it's not the same if you take it with a med.
Mm. But the natural way to sleep, we've had this discussion long ago. Does one need to have a full 6 hours, or do you can have
last
3 hours?
Last night I didn't get it.
3 hours plus 3 hours. And you're going to do your sleep in shifts today. You had your 3 hours last night, and you're going to do another 3 hours later on this afternoon.
Well, I'm going to skid into life at the end. I know. I just got to live. I'm sorry. All these people died.
But in yesteryear, 15,000 years ago, or as little as 400 years ago, people slept in shifts of 3 hours or 4 hours, and they're up again. A clan would go to bed when it got dark, and in the winter is 6 o'clock. Somebody would be left tending the pots, the fires, and so on. And then,
where's my guy to tend my fire?
And then about midnight or so, they would get up,
yeah,
and they would do their thing, eat, carouse, play, and then about 4 or so, go back to sleep and get up when the sun starts getting up.
You know, it's interesting. We look to the media and the doctor gurus and everything to tell us how everything is. So now they've told us, you have to have 8 hours sleep, and if you don't, we have sleep performance anxiety. But yet, if you go... There was an anthropologist that wrote a book studying sleep patterns all around the world like you're discussing, and there's lots of different ways to sleep, and people are healthy.
Yeah. From Alabama, Birmingham, she was?
I tried to go back and find that book, and I haven't been able to find it recently, but I did have a copy of it originally, but I don't know where she was from, Jerry. But the bottom line was, is there many cultures sleep in many different ways. There wasn't one way to sleep.
And also not necessarily sleeping by themselves, or just with their mate, they would sleep with whatever, with the dog, with the cat.
With the lights on. And they didn't
and
have
two or three other
high blood pressure and obesity.
Well, they would sleep in groups.
Right.
They would eat and get a little drowsy. They just fall asleep where they are. They didn't have to go to a bedroom and be by themselves. They just lay on the floor by their table or by their rock and fall asleep. Put the skin over their shoulders to keep them warm and go to sleep.
So if you're somebody listening to all this and you're going, well, I can't really, the trends of things go up and down. Eggs are good, then eggs aren't good. Meat is good, then meat isn't good. Low salt diet is good for heart patients. Oops, we made a mistake. No, it's no sugar, and low salt can make congestive heart failure patients worse. Why should we listen to anybody, and how do you figure out who to listen to, and how do you figure out to really get a great relationship with your own gut so you've got a gut feeling of what a supposed expert tells you, whether it's right for you or not? You know, most people aren't in medicine. So how do you figure out what really works for you? Who do you listen to? Paleo diet, vegan diet.
You listen to common sense. Your grandmother told you smoking was bad for you. And even though things come and go, this will never come again. Smoking is always going to be bad. I mean, that's common sense, gut feeling.
What if your grandmother smoked a pipe?
Now, there are some outliers, people that would smoke, and instead of dying early, they would live to be 90, 100, and they're still smoking. But by and large, the more
those are the people recently in a study came out. They're studying smokers who live to be 90 to 100 and are healthy and didn't have negative health consequences. They're literally taking a look at those designer genes that they've got, trying to figure out some things.
And if we all have those designer genes, we all live to be 90 or 120 or I don't know how long a person can live. 120.
Okay, I got a great story, how long a person can live. So I was, I'm working on this drug, and it looks like it might be happening now. And so I had a meeting with the kidney doc, and I went in, and he just turned 79, and they fired him from being the director of the dialysis center. He's robust and healthy, but they said 79 seems too old. So he was telling me this story that happened with one of his patients. She was an 89-year-old woman, and he asked on the initial intake, well, what did your mother die of? And she looked at him quizzically and said, she's not dead. And he went, what? How old is she? She said, well, she's 107. And this is in Austin, where I live. And he said, well, what's her health like, and where does she live? And she goes, she's absolutely healthy. She gardens. She dances on Saturday night at the church dance. She reads to the kids on Sunday. And he said, can you please bring her in with you the next time you come in? And she was on every six-week schedule. So 6 weeks later, these two little old ladies, he said, at that age, if you're both healthy, there's not much difference in appearance. So they looked really similar. And mm-hmm. they walked on in, and they were totally well.
They looked like siblings instead of two generations.
And people 85 years and older are the fastest growing demographic in the United States. So all the things we're talking about, like how do you then, if we're the fastest growing group, how do we stay well, and who do you listen to, you know, to do that, to really accomplish it?
And part of listening, you would add hormones to that mix.
Totally, even when someone is in their 80s or 90s, but it takes more finessing if your receptors have been quiet for all those years. So you have to go on it slowly. But if you go to a typical doc, they'll go, oh, 80, 90, you're not a candidate. You know, you will increase your risk the first year. Not necessarily so if it's done right. Well, you know, in your practice, how many women come in their 90s that had osteoporosis and breaking bones and no sex drive and were isolating? We've worked on a number of mutual patients, and within a short period of time, you reduce the amount of meds they're on, get them on hormones, they start wanting to make love, they start going out of the house, their bones remineralize in their 90s.
Well, talking about a hormone, that vitamin D is a hormone. We call it a vitamin, but it is transformed in the body, and there are receptors just like hormone receptors.
Vitamin D is truly amazing. It turns on the eyes of the immune system to see cancer and foreign invaders. Vitamin D is a hormone that intimately acts with your sex steroid hormones. It's just a big player. And people come in all the time with illnesses, but their vitamin D's in the toilet, and no one's tested it. No one's said anything to them about it.
Vitamin D, we get levels on everyone, and they say normal was between 30 and 100. And if you're 32, you're okay, but ideally they should be, I feel, between 60 and 90. And how much vitamin D does one need to get their levels at?
You know, vitamin D came out in an article a month or two ago that the lower your D, the more your risk of cognitive decline in Alzheimer's, along with it helps the sex hormones, which we just said.
Helps the brain.
Right. So why, when you go in for your physical, why isn't everybody testing it? And if it's below 60, why aren't people recommending that you boost your intake?
And then they say greater than 100 or maybe 120 is toxic. But you've never seen someone toxic with vitamin D. It is a fat soluble. It does stay in the body, but one needs to have 250, 300.
I don't know. You know, there was a study where it levels at 90. It came out about 2 years ago. It was there possibly, you know, it's an association with pancreatic cancer. So I try and err on a much more conservative level than you do, but it's all a moot point. The bottom line is it shouldn't be in the toilet.
It should be closer to 60 than to 30.
Right. Well, what do you think of this new virus in milk that's been linked to breast cancer? You want to chat about that?
Well, we're just about out of time, Jimmy.
Stay tuned to hear about this.
Yeah,
BLV.
And just want to remind folks that Dr. Berkson is in town this week, and you're taking patients, right, Dr. Berkson, this week?
I am, and Dorothy is my secretary, and up until through Wednesday, you could call her to make an appointment with me at 480-917-9898, and if you're calling later on in the week, you'll have to call me, and my number is 512-507-3279.
So if you'd like an appointment with Dr. Berkson this week, call Dorothy, 480-917-9898. We're going to take a quick break for news, and more of All Things Medical coming up. Stay tuned.
Hey, do you need more information? Well, you can find lots of it online at DocBlock.com. Or call 918-591-3891. That's 918-591-3891. Stay tuned. More of All Things Medical coming up. CareFirst Pharmacy is going to change your mind about how you think about pharmacy. At CareFirst Pharmacy in Broken Arrow, they strive to give you a positive experience. Their friendly staff, quick prescription fills, gift selection, and homemade fudge will keep you coming back. Now, a pharmacist is always there to discuss any questions or concerns you might have. And remember, CareFirst Pharmacy is locally owned and operated and is proud to offer you the same copay without all the wait or hassle. And don't forget, at CareFirst Pharmacy, compounding is their specialty. So while you're there, ask their expert pharmacist about topical pain cream and hormone replacement options. So why don't you check out CareFirst Pharmacy in Broken Arrow on Elm and 61st Street in Broken Arrow and be prepared to experience the CareFirst difference. At CareFirst Pharmacy, lives depend on a job well done.
This is a normal human heartbeat. If you have taken care of yourself, yours probably sounds a lot like this one. This is also the sound of an unhealthy heartbeat. It's why they call cardiovascular disease a silent killer, because you never know you have it until... Every 44 seconds, someone in America has a heart attack. Many are lucky. Many are not. Now, a simple screening from Integrations Health Center can tell you if you're at risk. This screening could save your life. For your appointment or for more information about the 7 for Life Cardiovascular Risk Screening, call Integrations Health Center at 918-591-3891 or visit DocBlock.com. I don't want you to put this off. Call now and make your appointment, 918-591-3891 or DocBlock.com.
There has been much talk lately regarding mammograms and their effectiveness, or lack thereof, in detecting breast cancer. Some suspect that the invasive procedures caused by false positives and the radiation from mammograms can even contribute to the development of breast cancer. Mainstream medicine still stands by them, but despite billions of dollars of research, breast cancer survival rates have changed very little over the last century. Now many doctors are looking at a test that can provide much earlier detection than mammograms. It's called breast thermography. It's based on thermodynamics and thermokinetics, and when it's used in conjunction with other tests, it has the ability to detect cancer up to 10 years earlier. breast thermography is now available at Integrations Healthcare at 61st and Sheridan. To learn more about breast thermography and how it could help save your life, visit OKThermogram.com.
And welcome back to All Things Medical here on Talk Radio 1170 KFAQ. I'm Jimmy Gerolds, your co-host, along with your host, Dr. Jerry Block from the Integrations Health Center at 61st and Sheridan, online at docblock.com, docblock.com, by the way, and like Integrations Health Center on Facebook. A very informative first half hour, as always, on this program, and special guest in the studio, and she's in town this week taking appointments, Dr. Lindsay Berkson from Austin, Texas. By the way, if you'd like to make an appointment with Dr. Berkson, you can call Dorothy at 480-917-9898. Again, that phone number to get an appointment with Dr. Berkson this week while she's in town, 480-917-9898. What about virus in milk?
BLV and breast cancer.
Wow.
Now, BLV is not all that common. Bovine leukemia virus.
Okay.
However, we pull milk. One doesn't get milk just from one cow. One gets milk from many, many cows as they're pulled together in big, big vats. So each bottle that comes out or carton that comes out has many, many cows that contribute the milk. Mm-hmm. What was the study that you read, Dr. Berkson?
This came out of UC Berkeley, and it came out this last week. And what was alarming was actually based on a 2007 survey of bovine leukemia virus in the herds in the United States, 82% of the herds had bovine leukemia virus in their serum. And what they did is they looked at 239 women who had breast cancer or did not. So it wasn't a large study, but it wasn't a teeny little pilot study either. And they found that 60% of the women who had breast cancer had exposure to bovine leukemia virus in the DNA of the breast cancer and their white blood cells, whereas women who didn't have breast cancer had a much lower incident, had much lower levels. So they are linking a 3.1 increased risk if you've got this virus in your blood to manifesting with breast cancer. So there's a lot of different things these days taking a look at viruses and transmission of illnesses.
Well, we knew that milk was slightly dangerous. We thought it was the hormone they gave cows to make more milk.
Right, right. You know, it's interesting because there is that one very famous woman who wrote a book that she had breast cancer, and it was metastatic, and she had had numerous rounds of chemo, and she went traveling. She was a scientist and went, when she was told to get all her affairs in order, around the world to find people who didn't have breast cancer. And in Japan, they have a lower incidence. They do consume less dairy. She went off dairy, and lo and behold, for some reason, she was able to put that into remission, and she wrote a book on the link between dairy products and breast cancer. So there's all kinds of possible ways. You know, there's other links of dairy products doing positive and beneficial things. This is where life is confusing. What's the best answer for you with a food? Is that food your friend or your foe? But this is huge. Out of a very well-respected scientific institution like University of California, Berkeley, to have this human study and link a virus. You know, last week in the news, they were wondering if Alzheimer's disease was also transmitted through exposure to various dairy products, mm-hmm. or even if you get if you get certain types of growth hormone, was it contaminated with that a number of years ago? If you get bone grafts, is it possible that prions could be contaminated?
Creutzfeldt-Jakob syndrome.
Right.
And these were prions or viruses, but we don't use that with HGH today, but still,
yeah,
it's in the literature.
So, but you know what's, hormones in milk are, we have a society today where our hormones aren't functioning the way they used to. We have an epidemic at the clinic I work at in Austin. We have polycystic ovarian syndrome. We have hundreds of teenage girls
with
that.
And a lot of that has to do with the receptors. Not that they don't have as much hormone, but the receptors, the receiver,
are clogged.
Are blunted, yes.
There was a study that came out of Italy a few months ago where they were able to show if a woman was on 10 days of ibuprofen-type drug, an NSAID, over-the-counter, for 10 days, it was at a dose on the label. It clogged the progesterone receptors so that it could make her not ovulate in the middle of her month when she should, and it was an antiprogestin. So there's plastics, there's pesticides, there's foods, and so we're seeing epidemics, and one of the things we're seeing is a huge epidemic of endometriosis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big moneymaker because of these surgical...
Endometriosis is when women who have a letdown of their endometrium, and the endometrium is other than within the uterus per se. It's on the walls of the uterus. It's outside the uterus. It could be in the fallopian tube. It could be implants on the peritoneum. And they actually bleed, and bleeding causes inflammation and pain in those areas.
It's like little teeny bits of, they're little teeny uteruses in the wrong place. But
the key is that this happens during menstruation.
Well, you know, but some women right. But the problem is it's on the increase, and the main way to treat it are heavy meds and surgical procedures, which often don't work, but bioidentical hormone intervention and nutritional intervention in human randomized trials has been shown to work, and that's what the FDA wants to take off the market.
Mm-hmm. You had a patient not too long ago that you were telling me that you gave
HCG.
Ewing chorio gonadotropin.
Right. I started to train medical docs and pharmacists in functional medicine. So I've been hired by a group called PCCA, and that's their deal, is they do continuing education for credits for keeping the license for pharmacists, and now for MDs and nurse practitioners.
You're giving one in Nashville.
I gave one in Nashville a month or two ago, a few months before my vacation, and now I'm going to be the keynote in February, and I gave a talk on endometriosis, and it's ways to, when it works fast. I mean, in a few months. And these are based on randomized human trials. So a nurse practitioner came up to me and said, I have this patient. She's had this for 14, 15 years. She's in so much pain that's not able to be controlled that she's thinking of getting an emergency hysterectomy. She hasn't had children yet. She's devastated. Would you please, I know you're leaving on vacation. So my intake's a lot when I work remotely, might be 2 to 3 hours on a complex case. I mean, I really delve in like you don't normally have someone delve in. And I was able to it takes me sometimes a few hours to connect the dots. Well, we put her on injections of a pregnancy hormone, human chorionic gonadotropin, which has been shown twice a week injections after 3 months to really decrease pain and inflammation and promote fertility.
But a fair amount, like we talked
large
about
dosage.
15.
So then they called me up. They were terrified. She had pain, and her urine looked positive for a pregnancy. I said, no, it's going to look like that because we're injecting the huge amounts of this pregnancy hormone into her. But within a month and a half, she was a changed person. I got a letter from the medical doc and the nurse practitioner saying, God sent you to us. We can't believe it. Now we've got this protocol to help so many women. But that's one of the drugs the FDA wants to remove on their difficult-to-make list, and it's crazy. We've been giving that for years. It's just a battle of money.
Now, you mentioned NSAIDs blunt the receptors.
Right.
And it's not unusual for endometriosis for doctors to prescribe NSAIDs. Do you think that one of the ways that ibuprofen works is that it decreases the receptors so they don't get bombarded?
Huh. I hadn't thought about that. That's something very interesting to think about. But, you know, it isn't just in women, because progesterone is made in the brain, right in the brain in young men and women, and it helps keep your brain.
I prescribe it to men.
Right.
Particularly men who aromatize their testosterone, and they make estrogen out of it.
Right, more feminized men. Right.
So they have estrogen dominance.
Right.
Compared to their progesterone. So we give these men progesterone. Again, we use it orally because it goes to pregnenolone helps the brain better heal and helps relax so they can sleep.
I wonder how many men are out there that are popping NSAIDs. For example, my ex was a really supreme athlete, and all those guys just live on NSAIDs because of all the consequential joint pain that they get by pushing themselves. Well, they are creating imbalances because men need progesterone too. And as our progesterone receptors get more clogged, as we age, we're more at risk of Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, all kinds of other things. Are not fighting off our own inherent viruses like Epstein-Barr. All the hormones are a family.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be in balance to keep yourself protected through the length of your life. But that hasn't been a
the length of your life.
Yeah.
So typically in their late 40s or early 50s, a fair amount of women lose their hormones, at least three of the very important ones, the estrogen, the progesterone, and the testosterone.
I have a great little story. So on my trip, for me on vacation, I go to the gym 2 hours a day and really relax and have fun with it. And I notice, I always look around the gym and see who's doing something that looks like I should try. So this guy had really great shape, and he was doing these weird things. So I started doing these weird things, and I was ecstatic I could. But within a week or two, I hurt my knees. So then a big dance convention was coming up, and I wanted to make sure that I wouldn't harm myself by continuing to dance on my knee, because I don't usually have joint issues. And I went to see this physiatrist, and I said, can you ultrasound my knee and just tell me if it's torn or if it's just sprained? And he kept looking at my chart and my age. He said, I think I have the wrong chart. Excuse me, let me go get the right chart. And he came back and he said, holy moly, this is your chart. He said, wait a second here. And he took the ultrasound out, and he started ultrasounding me everywhere. It was kind of like a comedic Seinfeld routine. And he said, look at your quads, look at your calves. You have the ligaments and the muscles of a woman 28 or 30. He said, you know, most women at 40, they don't make hormones anymore. And all the ligaments get loose, that you get pain, rheumatism, which all can be reversed with replacement. We don't think of hormone replacement getting rid of musculoskeletal pain and helping you avoid knee surgery down the road. But anyway, from being on hormones, he was amazed. He said, boy, you ought to consider coming on in here and working with some of my patients, because they're all at risk and hormones are part of it.
Mm-hmm. And you fortunately or unfortunately got involved in hormones at a very early age.
Oy.
We don't want to talk about that, but maybe you could, that you were on hormones before doctors were prescribing hormones routinely.
I had fetal hormone replacement.
With the DES, yes.
So for 36 years, millions of pregnant moms were given what they thought was like a prenatal vitamin, the most powerful estrogen ever made. It was really a public health tragedy. Almost, thalidomide is more famous, but DES was more widespread. And now it's diethylstilbestrol. And now it's known to be a class 1 carcinogen. And that's what we base all our understanding of pesticides, phthalates, all these things that are coming out. You know, exposure to plastics early in pregnancy increases your risk of gestational diabetes.
And it does that on the receptor side.
It's all based on our research of DES, what I was exposed to in the womb, because it was the most powerful estrogen ever, and it screwed up the satellite dishes, the receptors. And now we know that many things in our environment that give us modern technology.
And receptors
do
look like satellite dishes, except they have zinc fingers sticking out.
They do, to grab the hormone message. Yeah.
Mm.
So you got to tend your hormone satellite dishes as you age.
So not only do you have to watch your hormones, but you have to watch the receptors.
Right, because hormone delivers a message to the receptor. Of course, there is some signaling that doesn't use a receptor. It's not all as simplistic as that, but that's the easiest way to kind of...
The brain has some special receptors. The brain has hormone receptors as well.
Right, definitely. Mm. What are the ones you're thinking of?
We know for sure, we talked about progesterone. There's also testosterone and the estrogen receptors, and there's several estrogen receptors. We talked about the beta, the alpha.
You know, everyone talks about neurotransmitters in the brain, but neurotransmitters are intimately linked with hormones. They're best buds. They're best buds. And as your own hormones go down, your neurotransmitters go down, and those make a difference in your brain of your gut as well as the brain of your head, because When you're a fetus, there's one mass of cells and half goes to your brain and half goes to your gut. And both of those same exact cells, your gut, which is the mother of our health, and your brain.
And the gut has the same amount in proportion of the neurotransmitters as the brain has.
That's the point.
The serotonin.
They're both affected
the norepinephrine.
Hormones and neurotransmitters. Totally. And your gut bacteria, everyone's talking about the microbiome. It has receptors, little satellite dishes for estrogen and testosterone. So in a healthy young woman, her gut bacteria is feminized. It's estrogenic. And in a healthy young man, it's test androgenic. And that feedback loop, so if you take antibiotics, if you don't eat well, if you don't tend your gut, that futzes with your hormones too. So we're all one big planet.
You know, with the fecal transplant, they're not doing that. They probably should. Gender specific.
They're not doing it gender specific. Wow.
Shouldn't it be?
It should be. Are you sure they're not doing it gender specific?
They're trying to get a...
Oy vey. Gosh.
The doctor.
Maybe those are the cases that get autoimmunity. You know, there's a few cases in fecal transplantation where there have been things gone awry. They've developed some issues. I wonder if those are the cases.
Well, we know autoimmunity is much more in females.
Right. Maybe
than
a
in
male.
Males.
Maybe a male got a female fecal transplant.
Or get it naturally. I mean, we all get new bacteria in our gut from time to time. And if you got a male bacteria and you're a female, maybe that causes problems.
But the point being is that even your gut is in on your hormone health. And your hormone health influences your gut. And your gut influences your brain. There's no picking you apart. Yet when we go to doctors, there's a doctor for this part and a doctor for this part. When the compartmentalization was so that there's so much information on each area, one person has a specialty, but then we haven't had someone pulling it all together to look at a patient as a whole.
And that's what I have done in my years being a doctor.
You're a genius at that, Jerry.
I didn't want to be a cardiologist. I didn't want to be a nephrologist. I didn't want to be a gastroenterologist. I just wanted to be a doctor that knew about all those different parts and put it together, synthesize together, like you synthesize a problem. I was able to connect the dots from hepatology to nephrology to cardiology to neurology, etc.
That is so lost today in medicine, and that's I respect you for so many reasons, and that's really at the top of the list, definitely.
Let's talk, we have a few minutes to talk about diabetes. Diabetes.
Oh my God, this, in the last week.
The kid, the three-year-old who had diabetes, and she was 3 years old, just like a diabetic who was 40 years old, a type 2 diabetic.
Houston has a lot of really heavy people, and a doctor from Houston had a case that he presented.
In Stockholm.
There was a whole diabetic symposia in Stockholm, and he presented this three-year-old Hispanic young girl that had been raised by two obese parents that neither of them had type 2 diabetes, but in their household and culture, there was no ceiling on how much you ate. You could eat what's called ad libitum, as much as you want. And this little girl was obese and had elevated blood pressure, elevated blood sugar, all the stuff like a 60-year-old guy with a beer belly. And they put her on metformin, and which is a medicine that helps make your insulin receptors, your insulin satellite dishes work better, and cut down her calories. And in 5 months, she no longer had type 2 diabetes. And so that's been all over the news, looking at all these diseases earlier and earlier because we're eating too much and we're exposed to so many chemicals.
Talking about early, early diabetes, gestational diabetes, and pesticides.
In the literature over the last few months, there has been a plethora of meta-analyses looking at groups of studies and single studies linking stuff in the environment and disease. Women exposed to more phthalates, what's that? Plastics. Phthalates make plastic more flexible. So when you pull a little grocery bag off at the grocery store, that's got a lot of phthalates in it.
It makes plastic more flexible, but it makes the receptors inflexible.
Well said. That was good. And women exposed to new car smell is phthalates. Nail polish, phthalates. perfume, most perfumes have phthalates, not all. So if you are drenched in this, the American woman puts on many things by the time she leaves the bathroom in the morning that are phthalate rich. Women exposed to more phthalates in the early part of the pregnancy were more apt to get gestational diabetes later in the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And the study came out linking exposure to 21 pesticides with an increased risk of breast cancer. The moral of all this story, the moral of all of it, is get an air filter in your home, you know, really high quality, not just what you put in your ceiling, but a good air filter. Filter your water at the shower, filter the water that you drink, take vitamin C 1,000 milligrams several times a day to keep your detoxing, and have someone help you assess your life to reduce your exposure to things that it seems like you can't protect yourself, but you really can.
Particularly breathing, you know, the particulate matter that we breathe. There's been lots of literature recently.
Right. You know, so in hormone deception, if you go to my website, hormonedisruption.com, you can download for free a slideshow about how to reduce your exposure. And I talk about that book. The last third of the book is a tour of your home, your supermarket cart, and your office to reduce exposure to all these things. And it makes a difference. Kids who live closer to a road within a half a mile have much higher incidence of leukemia and lymphoma. Kids have higher incidence of type 1 diabetes, where you spray pyrethroids in the home. Kids have higher incidence of ADHD and anger and issues and impulsivity. So the bottom line of it all is no shoes at the front door to track junk in. Filter as much as you can. Buy organically as much as you can. You don't have a lot of rupees to buy everything organic. The stuff with more fat, because these chemicals love fat. And just, you can step by step without feeling overwhelmed. Like that's, I give some steps in that free slideshow on my website. You can start taking more control over what you're exposed to.
So it's exposure. So it's genetics as well as acquired disease.
Right.
That causes people not to live quite as long, or can cause people to live very long if they have good genes and they play the game right.
But Doris Rapp, she's the psychiatrist that's been into nutrition for years. She and I did a TV show on Good Morning San Francisco years ago, and she said if you were to take several thousand milligrams of just vitamin C several times a day, you help constantly clear out these chemicals. If when you work out at the gym and you get red in the face and sweat, wipe that sweat off because you're clearing out chemicals.
Right. And that sweat has different kinds of toxins. It's lipid-soluble
toxins.
That if you don't sweat, and some people try to clean themselves out by drinking lots and lots of fluid, but these are the water-soluble toxins that you may be getting rid of, but you don't get rid of the fat-soluble ones.
So there's lots of things you can do in a healthy lifestyle without driving yourself crazy to just give yourself a better chance to have a better tomorrow.
Yeah.
Isn't that the bottom line?
A lot of people sweat, but not everybody wipes it off. And you really need to wipe it off because the big drops fall out, but there's billions of little drops that just stay on your skin, and the fat-soluble toxins are reabsorbed.
So what about people, you know, in Europe, they have saunas. This sauna is a part of life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know the firemen here in this country that get exposed to chemicals when they walk into a burning building, they can have lots of health issues, and they put them in heat and do a variety of things to sweat it out, as well as, so I talk about that in Hormone Deception. But do you think that everyone should be having access to some kind of...
They should. Sauna or so they can sweat. Everybody, the more they sweat, the better off they are. The people that live in the South sweat more, at least they used to before they're air-conditioned everywhere, and they had a lot less incidence of cancer, for example. We're just about out of time. I see Jimmy making funny faces at me. I
always make funny faces at you, Doc.
But you have such a nice-looking face, and then you make it funny by putting your tongue through your cheek and your tongue trying to touch your nose.
Yeah.
But you have a nice smile.
Well, thank you. And we want to remind folks that Dr. Lindsay Berkson will be in town taking appointments this week at Dr. Block's office. Again, if you'd like to make an appointment with Dr. Berkson, you can call Dorothy. She's setting up those appointments for Dr. Berkson. Her number is 480 917-9898. Again, that phone number for appointments with Dr. Berkson this week while she's in town. Call Dorothy, 480-917-9898. Dr. Berkson, now, do you have, why don't you tell our All Things Medical friends it's a cash customer, right?
Yeah, I work really differently. I work here as a consultant in an educational manner. I take an hour to really go over your history, what you've been exposed to, what are the ways your life is snagging you back, and really in-depth analyze what might be all the pieces that are your weakest links and how might we shore them up. And I give you leave the office with a game plan, a written game plan.
Dr. Berkson and Dr. Block, I'm Jimmy Gerald. Have a great rest of your Sunday.
You've been listening to All Things Medical with Dr. Jerry Block from the Integrations Health Center at 61st and Sheridan here in Tulsa. If you'd like some more information, go online to docblock.com or call Dr. Jerry Block's office at 918-591-3891 on Talk Radio 1170 KFAQ. All Things Medical.